no one can resist dancing. There's no way you will find drums that you will not find smile, you will not find happiness that comes from within, and also healing. We see it as spiritual as well.
Drumming gives you a sensation that you will never be lost. It gives you the lifting up in the worst moment of life. Singing, the drumming, the dancing brings you up again.
There's no event that we will do if there's no drum, there's no event.
What you're hearing is the bata drums. That's a set of three different drums, each one with a different rhythmic role. They are played for secular reasons and also for ceremonial, spiritual reasons. They originate in Yoruba land, which is in Nigeria in West Africa, and they were brought during the transatlantic slave trade to Cuba and other parts of Latin America, where today they're played in a very vibrant and lively way. The Secret Life of Language, a podcast from the School of Languages and Linguistics at the University of Melbourne. I'm Professor Adrian Hearn. I'm an anthropologist, and let me tell you how I came to the bata drums. I first got interested in drums living in Madison, Wisconsin, in the United States, when a Menominee First Nation community down the street from where I lived invited me every week to its drumming ceremonies. Through that experience, I took an opportunity to study for a year abroad in Senegal, in West Africa. My teacher of Wolof, the Senegalese language, was a musician, and when I asked him to play me his music, he played Cuban music. The Orquesta Baobab was the name of his band. I got fascinated in Cuba and decided to do a PhD on Cuba. But from the United States, it was impossible because of the political problems between the two countries. So, of all places, I came to Australia. And that's where I started getting into the bata drums.
Yeah, bata, lo yures o que boda.
But for people in places like Cuba, their entry into the world of bata drumming usually comes earlier and more organically.
My name is Aloy Ismael Juncovel. I'm born and raised in Cuba, and I was drumming before. I was dancing, so I'm a professional dancer, graduated from the National School of Arts of Cuba, and been dancing in a different dance company. And I started drumming before I started dancing, so I started drumming from very early age. And since I opened my eyes, the only thing I saw was drums and singing. And that's how I learned how to drum and sing. So for me, it's my life. Of course, dancing is my bread and butter. But in Cuba, we say saying that if you have your drums, you will never be hungry. Because a lot of time we actually live by that drums and we make money from that drums.
That's my friend Aloy Junco from Cuba. We've been playing the bata drums together for about 20 years. And we'll hear more from him later.
My name is Bosede Adetifa. I am from Nigeria. I am from the Yoruba tribe. And I came to Australia in 2000. The bata drum is well embedded in our culture. In Yoruba culture, we do have a set of family that are well devoted to drumming. So we call them the devotees of the drums.
And that's my friend and colleague Bosede Adetifa, originally from Yoruba land in West Africa, where the story of the bata drums begins. So what are the bata drums, and what do they look like? The bata drums are a set of three drums, and each one is an hourglass shape with two heads. So you play it with two hands, and they're made completely of natural elements, of timber, usually cedar, and of animal skin, which is obviously part of the heads, but also wrapped around the drum to tune it. So the belief is that here we have in our hands an element of nature. The bata drums originated in Yoruba land, in what's now called Nigeria in West Africa. And for centuries, they've been played as a ceremonial object, as a ceremonial drum, but also, you know, for parties and for fun. There's a story about Anya Galu, the very first bata drummer, who arrived unknown to anyone to a ceremonial solemn occasion where a king was being coronated. Everyone was standing really still and watching the ceremony, and he started playing this drum and people started moving to it and enjoying it. And they liked it so much that ever since that mythic day, drums have to be part of every ceremony and every celebration in Yoruba land. He then disappeared and no one knew what became of him, but he left the lessons behind him. And people now play those lessons, the drums, how they're made, the rhythms themselves, to honor the memory of Anya Galu. Anya Galu gave his name to the sacred bata drums, and those who play the sacred bata drums are called Omo Anya, which means a son or a child of Anya. Yoruba is a tonal language, and so when people speak it, they use different pitches. And the bata drums emulate those pitches. There's another drum called the gangan, which does this in a very dynamic way by squeezing it under your arm. People call it a talking drum, also from Yoruba land.
Kaabo, se daada lode. Ati reti re kaabo se daada lode enikan obinu re kaabo se daada lode ati reti re kaabo se daada lode enikan obinu re kaabo se daada lode.
Each of the three bata drums has a different focus and function. They are considered to be a family structure. So the biggest one, the lead one, is called the Iya, which means the mother drum.
Iya is like the heartbeat of the drum. Every hit is a conversation. Every hit is a meaning. Every hit is, actually with a dancing, a step. Doesn't matter on the leg, on the torso, on the hips. It goes there, it flows there. So the ya is, yeah, the heart of the whole drumming.
So the mother calls the children to behave in certain ways. And then the second drum has to respond to the mother. Second drum is called the itotele. Some people say that that's the father of the family doing what the mother tells him to do. Other people say it's the elder child of the family. But the point is, the itotele responds in a conversation with the mother.
The more difficult one is the itotele. You need to be very sharp. You need to be very sharp to keep the conversation with the iya. You need to really respond to flow a lot with the iya to make the melody flowing.
And then finally, you have the okonkolo, sometimes called omele, which means the one who sings out above the others. It's a bit like a baby singing out while the mother and the elder brother argue.
The okonkolo is a beautiful one. The okonkolo keeps the ya and the totale in shape. So without the okonkolo, we cannot have the timing for us to flow because we need to follow the rhythm. So without the okonkolo, there is nothing that we can do because the rhythm won't be complete. So the okonkolo is the beautiful drum that keeps us in check.
So it's like having a family, yeah, like having a nuclear family where you have the father, the mother, and the child. And when you bring the three together, they give you this wonderful musical tone that no one can resist dancing.
I remember when I was learning these, it was very, important to be able to respond on the itotele precisely how you should respond to your mother. So my teacher sat me down after about a year of studying the itotele. This is in Santiago de Cuba, east of Cuba. And he said, okay, you've been studying itotele. You know how to respond. Now I'm going to test you. So we sat down and he took the iya, gave me the itotele, and he called me. He called me on the iya and I responded just as I'd been taught to respond. I did it, I thought, pretty well. He didn't think so. He kind of shook his head and put the drum down and looked at me and, after a moment of pause, just said, Adrian, what are you doing? Don't you know that when you reply to your mother, you have to wait for her to finish talking first? And that's when I realized that these drums are more than rhythms. They embody relationships. They're supposed to carry with them values, a kind of respect within the family structure for the figure of the mother. That's when I realized I was getting into something bigger than just hitting a drum. The bata drums are played for different reasons. On the one hand, you have very solemn ceremonial reasons and contexts. On the other, they are mixed with popular music. And when you do it that way, they have a different name. They're not called anya. In that context, anya is for sacred, consecrated drums. In a secular context, with pop music or rumba or something, we call them abericula.
The anya is the drums that they have been passed through a ceremony that have give the power to have the conversation, to have that connection between the Orisha and Olofin, the supreme god. So anya has that power. The abericola doesn't have that power. So the abericola is used on a stage, a performance. Yeah. But when it comes to a ceremony in the house, ceremony with religion, you have to use anya.
Abericola drums are typically manufactured drums. They're probably not handmade. They haven't been consecrated. They may well have been made in a factory somewhere, both in Cuba and outside Cuba. But the distinguishing point is these drums are not believed to be alive. They don't have the spirit of anya inside them. They are for fun, for learning, for teaching. You know, a student who comes along and wants to learn bata drums cannot touch the sacred bata drums because they're not initiated. They're not omwanya, so they're not allowed to touch anya drums. They have to use abericula drums when they're learning. I asked Bosede about the various ways bata and other drums permeate and punctuate village life in Yoruba land.
So there's no way you will find drums that you will not find smile, you will not find happiness that comes from within and also healing. We see it as spiritual as well. when you hear the sound of music, you can't stop yourself. The joy will come. You'll be happy. And sometimes we use drum for different things, to communicate, to tell if an icon has departed, or when there's arrival of a newborn baby. So there are all different types of drums. And also we have what we call aroko. It's like sending message using drum. So if there's a village that is at war with another village, or a village has done something wrong that offended the other village, then the king of that land will send a message using drum and say, I need to call for a meeting based on this. Once people hear it, they know what it means.
That's so beautiful that you have so much percussion in life.
Yes.
In Yoruba land.
Yes.
For me, one of the magical things since 30 years ago when I began playing the bata drums and studying,
yes,
was the sense that they're a little bit more than a musical instrument.
Yes.
Like you said, the word healing.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the bata drum's spiritual dimensions?
I grew up where you wake up to the sound of music in the morning. And you go to bed with the sound of music. You know, there's always something fun. And I think this really keeps the community together. You see people singing and drumming, and this attracts people, bring people together. And that is the spirit of the drum.
In Yoruba land in West Africa, different cities have the names of different deities. These deities are called orishas. So, for example, you have the city of Oya. You have the state of Ogun. The orishas embody natural forces. They are spiritual beings, deities. And they are premised on historical figures, real people that used to live, but then after they died, kind of became canonized in Yoruba mythology. Now, they represent natural forces. So Oya, for example, is the goddess of the wind. Shango is the god of thunder and lightning. Ochun, the goddess of rivers. Yemaya, the goddess of the sea. But with these natural forces come human characteristics as well. So, for example, Shango is considered to be someone who will punish you if you do bad things in life by bringing thunder and lightning down upon you. He's also considered a very male orisha, so he embodies kind of male energy and has a lot of girlfriends in the mythological understanding. Kind of contrasts with one of his girlfriends, Oshun, who's the goddess of the rivers. So Oshun is also the person, the goddess who embodies female sensuality, which you hear in the river as it goes by. The trickle of the water should sound, according to the mythology, like the kind of laughter and happiness, the giggling of a woman who is sensual and happy. So you can kind of see how human characteristics get connected with these natural forces of nature. The bata drums are played for the orishas, and so each of the rhythms sounds different, feels different, and evokes different feelings. For this reason, the rhythms of Chango are really ferocious. They are high energy. And, you know, that represents the energy of Chango, of the thunder, of the lightning. And there's no mistaking it. When you hear Chango being played, you feel it. It's the most high energy of all of the Orisha rhythms. On the other hand, you have sometimes very calm and slow rhythms on the bata drums. For Yemaya, the goddess of the sea, a rhythm called Yakota. Sort of like a waltz. It's just kind of really slow. But of course, the sea can also kick up storms, can't it? When the wind blows and the sea gets angry, Yemaya also gets angry, and the rhythms for Yemaya do the same thing. They speed up. They're the fastest of all the rhythms when she gets like that. When Yemaya comes down and takes possession of a devotee in a ceremony, the rhythms go so fast and so energetic. A rhythm called Aro Yemaya, I can't even do it with my voice. It's so fast. You know, and if you watch that happening, it's hard not to be kind of mesmerized by that energy. So the drums reflect these characteristics and energies.
There is a conversation from the orishas to the drums to the singing. So it's all connected. That's why some of them, they get possessed and you get to see incredible scenes. I have seen things by the drumming. I know that there is a force beyond us as a human being. There is an energy that flows around us that make you, I don't know, cry, make you happy, make you do things that you say, oh, how did I do this? No, there's an energy there. And because I've seen it, I believe on that energy.
To play bata drums in a ceremonial context in Yoruba land and in Cuba, you have to have gone through rigorous training, both technically in the musical sense, but also spiritually. That training requires huge commitments. And so, inevitably, only a select few are called to that role.
Those who are given that role, that is their thing.
Sure, and I know that some of those are called babalaos. And the babalao is connected, as I understand, with the orisha called orula, yes. Orunmila. Can you say something about Orunmila? Orula?
Yes, I know you call it Orunla. We call him Orunmila. Orunmila is a god, the orisha of wisdom or divination. And as a matter of fact, is the only orisha that had the opportunity to witness what God was doing at the time during the creation of the world. So Orunmila is so powerful, and it's just a god that a lot of people go to and see as a direct servant of God. We have the supreme God that a lot of us sort of look up to. But Orunmila is another god under the supreme God. That's the way we see him.
This relates to another question I wanted to ask you about popular perceptions in the Yoruba community about the drums and about the orishas. We've spoken about this once or twice before, that we have to be a bit careful and delicate when we talk about the orishas in the community events.
Yes.
And that it's better to describe them in cultural terms rather than spiritual terms or religious terms. Can you tell us a bit about attitudes towards the orishas and the drums?
For me, as a person, I'm a Christian. I believe in God. And at the same time, I'm looking after children of my community people, especially teaching them the language. I wouldn't want them to think I'm teaching them about orisha, because I know a lot of people don't believe in orisha. And I can say to you, if you go out there in the Yoruba community and start praising orisha, you'll find people that will walk away because they don't believe in it. And a lot of people do believe in that as well. So it's not just about the orisha that we see. It is actually about the drums that bring us together. That drumming is really important for us, and we like to listen to it. And you will see a lot of people, a lot of Yoruba will not want to dance. When it gets to you singing about Ogun or orisha, they will start stepping out. Call them to come and dance with you. They will. But as soon as you start calling on the gods, watch them. They start stepping back.
You mentioned before that when the British went to Africa,
yes,
they brought some ideas with them. And some of those ideas were accepted, maybe spiritual ideas, religious ideas. Mm-hmm. Some of them maybe not so accepted. Mm-hmm. And there's a proverb that you taught me about bread.
Oh, yes.
About the difference between traditional food and bread that the British brought, sliced bread.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit about this proverb? What's the meaning and how does it sound?
Wow. It's just a little story where you have a child who is hungry and mom is offering bread. And this child is not used to bread. This child is used to going to the farm, getting what he needs, like pawpaw or papaya. And then mom giving bread is like, what is this slice of bread? Mom, I am a typical village boy. I don't eat bread. I will eat my papaya. And the song goes like, Iyanwojebekwe, omoko ki isunkun buredi. Iyanwojebekwe, 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 omoko ki isunkun buredi. Iyanwojebekwe, 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 omoko ki isunkun buredi. Iyanwojebekwe. All it means is, a child from the village will never cry for bread. So I am content with what I have. I will go back to my papaya, not to bread.
Bolinche, bolinche, bolinche obaitola.
Bolinche, bolinche, bolinche obaitola.
Bolinche, bolinche, bolinche obaitola.
Bolinche, bolinche, bolinche obaitola.
Eh, wele, wele, inayo, inayo.
It might seem strange for a West African tradition to be so vibrant in Cuba, these bata drums. How did they get there? Well, to understand that, we need to know something about the transatlantic slave trade. During the transatlantic slave trade, about 12 million people were forcibly removed from their homes in West Africa to the Americas, including the United States, Cuba, Brazil, and across the region. And in Cuba, about 780,000 people found themselves struggling really for survival and cultural identity. What we do know is they weren't allowed to bring anything with them. What they brought with them was their knowledge, their tradition. And that's where Anya lives, in people's heads. In Yoruba land, in the language is called Ori. Ori is your head. It's where you carry the most important knowledge. And that's where the rhythms were stored. That's where they were transported when the people were brought over from West Africa. So in that area, in Cuba, they consolidated with other ethnic groups to form the basis of what they call now Lucumí culture. Now, in Cuba, people had to mix together, and they worshiped together in the same houses, houses that came to be called temple houses, casa templos. And when you have a mix like that coming together, you generate a whole new approach to understanding the divine. Now you have what's essentially bringing together a number of different values and a number of different traditions under one roof. And Lucumí culture has the bata drums as a sacred, central component of identity. And so people were brought throughout the Americas, but it's only in Cuba that the bata drums survived and persisted and, you know, kind of took on a life of their own. Some people call Cuba the Mecca of bata drums because the tradition has been kind of conserved in a way that, according to them, has not been conserved even in Nigeria itself. Now, of course, Nigerian Yoruba people might not agree with that. They might say, no, we still keep to the pure tradition. But many people say that in Cuba is where the tradition now is most faithfully practiced anywhere in the world. So how do today's Yoruba people view the legacy of that period and the export of their culture across the Atlantic?
We actually believe there are family members in Cuba that we will never know. But we believe strongly that our people were taken out of Yoruba land to America, to different places during the slave trade. And with this, there's a great disconnection. And then there's loss of language, loss of their root. And we feel that, we hear that story that, look, maybe your brother is there. And I think having that awareness gives us the strength to be kind to anyone we see, because that person may actually be our blood that we don't know, that we lost many years ago. So we believe that we have connection around the world. Everywhere you go, you see Yorubas. And we believe the drum is the only thing that they took with them to keep them alive, to keep them connected to the spirit of one, the one spirit that connects us together through drums. And sung, some of them are able to sing to that drum. So they took it away, and though the language may be lost, but we still have that strong connection.
Do the drums sound similar to
yes.
you?
Yes. The way you beat bata is the way we beat bata in Yoruba land. It's the same.
The secular use of the bata drums, you know, for parties and festivals and things, that is something that anybody can do. Anybody can touch those. But it's different when you go to a ceremony. We call this an anya ceremony, a tambor is what we call this. In this context, you can only touch those consecrated anya bata drums if you are omo anya, which means a child of the bata drums. That's a ceremony that you go through, and it takes some training in order to get there. Now, if you're learning to play the bata drums, but you've not yet made the ceremony to be omo anya, you can still touch the bata drums in a ceremonial context if you go through a ceremony that we call washing the hands. It's a way that you can learn and train and be in a real situation. If somebody does that, there are going to be questions asked by the congregation that's there. They're going to say, who is this person? Who are they connected with? And can that person confirm that they've really had their hands washed? Because you don't want someone without that preparation touching the drums. This is actually thought to damage the drums if somebody does that. You know, quite strict measures are taken to make sure you can only touch them if you're initiated. Now, how do you learn then? How do you learn to become an omo anya? This is something that's changed over the years. These days in Cuba, foreigners will just kind of show up with a fistful of money and say, you know, let me buy my initiation. And there are people who will give them that initiation in Cuba and then look for the next foreigner to come along and do the same and, you know, make a living this way. It wasn't that long ago that that knowledge was not exchanged for money. I mean, if you think about it, tourism only took off in Cuba from about the year 2000. So when people wanted to learn how to play bata drums before 2000, the way they would learn is apprentice themselves to a teacher. And they would have to do work for that teacher. They would have to do gardening, clean the house, do all kinds of whatever the teacher wants them to do, cook for them. I think, a good way to get the message into people's heads that this isn't just a transaction. This is something that you work for, something that you're only going to get if you take it seriously and put some effort into. There are specific roles for who can take on the training to eventually be initiated and become omo anya. And that's to do with gender. Remember the Orisha Chango, who I mentioned before as the channel of male energy? Well, he's also the patron of the bata drums.
In Cuba, the woman cannot touch anya. That's the way I've been raised. Like, we don't get an explanation of why the woman cannot, but Abericola, yeah, the woman can play. Actually, you have groups of women that they play bata, Abericola. But the woman cannot be omo anya.
In Yoruba land, there are certain roles. The dancing role is for the women. They do the dancing with some of the men, but the men will do the drumming most of the time. These days, you see some women coming up and start drumming as well. So in the beginning, I did mention that there's specific family that are devotees of the drum, and they are the keeper of the drum. They are the makers of the drum. They make the drum. They get the hide. They create it. They put it out there. They drum it and try it out. And there are a lot of things that goes into that. Women don't know about those things. So there are few women, very few women that are so powerful in Yoruba land that would know about things like that.
Is it possible that women could learn that power or have that power bestowed on them?
These days, you have few women coming up and start drumming, but those people that you see are just drumming, just ordinary drums. But when you talk about the spiritual drums that is connected with one deity or the other, women are exempted from it. There will be probably one or two women that will graduate to that level to have that power. But for them to get there, they would have strong connection with those who are in the know about that. And there would have been certain delegations that has been given to them, and they have proved that they are capable.
If you ask an Omoanya, who is a fully initiated player of ceremonial bata drums, about certain things to do with their practice, or even about the drums themselves, be prepared for answers that are, shall we say, less than forthcoming.
Anya is made of different wood because inside has a little... I cannot tell you everything about the Anya, especially the secret that is inside the Anya, because we shouldn't do it. It's not allowed. Because you need to be Omo Anya. If you are no Omo Anya, if your blood hasn't spilled on the drum, you are no consider Omo Anya to be able to talk about the secret of Anya.
Aloy is guarding the truth there, because this has always been sacred knowledge. And in Cuba, this secrecy was only deepened during slavery, because the knowledge of the drum was a means of cultural survival. So it's taken very seriously, even today. There are some things that I can talk about in a bata ceremony and some I can't, but one thing I can share is that in a ceremony there are no spectators. If you go there, you are there to participate. You can't just go there and watch. There's no audience. So I remember, for example, my sister coming and attending a bata ceremony with me. I was playing in that ceremony, and I probably should have prepared her more for this, because she arrived there and Oshun came down into somebody's head and was going around and interacting with the congregation and, you know, approached my sister, and she really was quite confused by this and a little upset, to be honest. She didn't realize that if you're in the room, you're there to participate, to move, to clap, to sing, to be part of it. There's no spectator. I'm a drummer, and many times in my life, I've been playing drums in the morning, in the evening, and people say, "It's too loud. Can you stop? Why are you playing drums?" Does this happen in Yoruba land when people drum? Do the neighbors get upset? What do they say?
I have not experienced that in Yoruba land. When you play drum, people are happy because they know you don't just play a drum for no reason. There must be a reason for playing a drum. Even if you play it in the middle of the night, we will not be offended. We will be more curious than getting angry. And that's one of the reality shock I had when I got here, because everything is so quiet. We like noise, make noise, and it makes it more interesting.
I'm moving to Yoruba land.
Come on, let's go.
I became Omoanya in 2001, which interestingly makes me an elder here in Australia, whereas I feel very much like a child, as Omoanya suggests, a child of the drums. When I go to Cuba, I see the level of expertise and I feel very much put in my place. But I remember the day in Santiago de Cuba when we did that ceremony. Such a happy occasion, such a big party, a whole community around you, cheering you on, helping you to play these rhythms, teaching you in front of, a big congregation of people. A really joyous occasion to become Omoña.
In our culture, it's our part of our religion to make ceremonies in terms of spirituality. Drumming gives you a sensation that you will never be lost. We all passed off a lot of crap in life, yeah? And we got knocked down and we raised up again. So this drumming, it gives you the lifting up in the worst moment of life. Singing, the drumming, the dancing bring you up again.
Well, that wraps up this episode of The Secret Life of Language. Special thanks to our guests, Miss Bosede Adetifa and Aloy Junco. Musicians contributing to this episode were Aloy Junco, Lucas Enciso, and me, Adrian Hearn. Producers for this episode were Eric Van Bemmel and Kelvin Param of Profactual and Gavin Neighbor. The song featured in this podcast is Keeper of Secrets about the Orisha Orula by Sons of Mercury. The Secret Life of Language is recorded and mixed at Horwood Recording Studios by Gavin Neighbor, and is a podcast from the University of Melbourne's School of Languages and Linguistics. Be sure to keep up with every episode of The Secret Life of Language by following us on the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. The Secret Life of Language is licensed under Creative Commons, Copyright 2024, the University of Melbourne. I'm Professor Adrian Hearn. Thanks for joining us.